All right, I'm Susan Wallace. I'm one of the new rheumatology attendings here. And we'll just talk about inflammatory myopathies today. And I guess this is very informal, so just interrupt at any time if you have any questions about anything. So there's a number of different inflammatory myopathies, including dermatomyositis, polymyositis, juvenile dermatomyositis, inclusion body myositis, myositis associated with collagen vascular disease, and myositis associated with malignancy. And actually, we'll only just talk about polymyositis, dermatomyositis, and inclusion body myositis today. So the inflammatory myopathies are a rare, relatively heterogeneous group of acquired diseases characterized by inflammatory infiltrative skeletal muscle. The incidence ranges anywhere between 2 to 10 per 100 million people. It says here in the United States, but it's pretty much worldwide. And they are a set of potentially treatable diseases. The heliotrope rash that we know is characteristic of dermatomyositis was first described in 1875 in France. In 1888, the first American biopsy documented polymyositis in a patient they were ruling out for trichinella. In 1930, Grattan reported skin lesions on a patient, and it wasn't until 1967 that the pathology of inclusion body myositis was first identified. There is a bimodal age distribution. There's a first peak in adolescents between the ages of 10 to 15, and a second peak in adults between the ages of 45 to 60. And inclusion body myositis is predominantly a disease in patients over the age of 50. And across all of them, there is a strong female predominance. The differential diagnosis is broad and includes most of the acquired myositis. There are quite a number of drugs, including colchicine that we typically use for gout, steroids that we use for almost everything, but more commonly heroin, alcohol, the statins. There are metabolic causes, including hypoglycemia and hypophosphatemia and other things, malignancy. There are people who have a genetic predisposition for developing a myositis. And then a number, these are only a few, there are a number of different infectious agents that can cause an acquired myositis. There was a set of criteria that was proposed in the 70s to define polymyositis and dermatomyositis. The first is symmetric weakness of the limb girdle muscles and the anterior neck flexors, and the limb girdle would be the shoulder and pelvic muscle groups. Skeletal muscle histology showing evidence of necrosis, phagocytosis, regeneration with basophilia, large sarcolemmal nuclei and prominent nuclei, atrophy in a perifascicular distribution, and a variation of fiber size with an inflammatory exudate, as well as elevation of serum skeletal muscle enzymes, including CPK, aldolase, the transaminases, and LDH. EMG findings, a triad of short, small polyphasic motor units, fibrillations, positive waves, and insertional irritability, and bizarre high-frequency discharges. And then the fifth would be for dermatomyositis, and those dermatologic features include a heliotrope rash with periorbital edema, a scaly erythematous dermatitis over the dorsum of the hands, especially the MCPs and PIPs. Those are the Grattan's papules. And involvement of the knees, elbows, medial malleoli, face, neck, and upper torso. Separate are the diagnostic criteria for inclusion body myositis, which include both pathologic and clinical criteria. The electron microscopy findings include microtubular filaments within the inclusions. And light microscopy, you want to look for lined vacuoles and or intranuclear or intracytoplasmic inclusions or both. And the clinical criteria are similar. Proximal muscle weakness, distal muscle weakness, EMG evidence, an increase in the serum muscle enzymes, and also failure of muscle weakness to improve on high-dose steroids. And that should typically be 40 to 60 milligrams per day for about 4 months before you can call them a failure. So again, polymyositis and dermatomyositis can occur sporadically or in association with other systemic autoimmune diseases. Again, more common in women. Dermatomyositis is actually more common than polymyositis. And again, the dermatologic manifestations that we talked about, including the heliotrope rash, the Graton's papules, an erythematous rash over the chest that's called a Schall sign, erythematous nail folds, and patients can also develop dermatomyositis, seen myositis, which is a little difficult to diagnose. The clinical, yeah. They're pretty separate. They usually don't. They have different histologic features that I'll show you later, and they really don't. It's not a continuum. The clinical features for both dermatomyositis and polymyositis are the same, which is predominantly progressive painless muscle weakness. And patients will complain of difficulty combing their hair or difficulty reaching a high shelf or getting up from a low chair or getting up from their toilet. Sometimes they'll only just complain of nasal regurgitation or choking when they eat, or a hoarseness and a change in their voice to a very nasally quality. And if a patient develops ocular or facial muscle involvement, it's extremely rare in these conditions, and it should prompt an evaluation for some other type of myopathy. Vague constitutional symptoms. Also, patients can have a lot of fatigue. Fevers are more common in either adolescent dermatomyositis or in patients who have the antisynthetase syndrome that we'll talk about a little bit later. Also, weight loss. In general, the patients can develop a non-erosive inflammatory polyarthritis that's in a rheumatoid-like distribution, meaning predominantly MCP and PIP joint involvement, except in the JO1 patients, which are the patients that have the antisynthetase syndrome, again, we'll come to, and that can be very deforming and erosive. Patients often can have Raynaud's phenomenon, develop interstitial lung disease, cardiac abnormalities, and again, it can be amyopathic. This is just an example of kind of the deforming arthritis that you can see with patients who have the anti-JO1 antibody syndrome. They have some subluxations, and you can't really make them out, but they do have erosions here in the MCP joints. Inclusion biomyositis can present identical to polymyositis. It's typically insidious and slow. Polymyositis can differ from polymyositis in that they can have a lot more distal involvement, which is a little unusual, at least in the presentation of polymyositis. This can also be focal. Dysphagia is usually a late occurrence in these patients, and a lot of them have really only very mild increases in their CPKs and can be normal in up to a quarter of the patients. Oops. So these are some of the dermatologic things that we can see with dermatomyositis. This is the heliotrope rash, and there's a little bit of periorbital edema. It's hard to make out there. These here you see are the Graton's papules. And actually what's interesting is what can differentiate this from lupus, which can present very similarly, is patients with lupus get erythema in between their joints and not over their joints. Dermatomyositis patients get erythema over their joints, so that's a good differentiation. And this is, they call it like a mechanic's hands, and it's usually not as red as this. It's usually a little bit browner, and it's just kind of dirty-looking, dry, cracked fingers. They call it mechanic's hands. This is an example of the Schall sign. It's sort of a V-typed erythema over the anterior chest. You can also get it on the back of the neck. And this is periungual erythema or nail fold erythema that you can look for. Another thing that you can look for are changes in the nail fold capillaries. And you can do this in the clinic if you just put a drop of Surgilube or something, and you can use an ophthalmoscope to look for dilated. This is normal. This patient has scleroderma, and these two bottom patients have dermatomyositis. And you look for dilated capillary loops with dropout in between, and this is just completely distorted architecture of the capillary bed. You can sometimes pick these up if they're pretty dilated. some of the cardiac manifestations, they're rare and they're usually asymptomatic, but people can develop myocarditis with secondary arrhythmias, rarely CHF, very rarely myocardial fibrosis. Cor pulmonale can develop secondary to interstitial lung disease, and again, they have the risk of accelerated atherosclerosis with prolonged steroid use. A lot of patients develop dyspnea for both non-pulmonary and pulmonary reasons. Non-pulmonary is primarily respiratory muscle weakness, occasionally secondary to cardiac involvement. And the interstitial lung disease, patients can develop NSIP, UIP, diffuse alveolar damage, or even a cryptogenic organizing pneumonia. They can develop secondary pulmonary hypertension, alveolar hemorrhage, infection, either with aspiration or secondary to their immunosuppressants. And there's always drug-induced interstitial lung disease from something like methotrexate, which we would commonly use to treat this. So the pulmonary evaluation for these patients is usually a high-res CT, and you would see increased interstitial markings. They should have a full set of PFTs, which would show a decrease in total lung volume and a mildly decreased DLCO. On BAL, you would see an abnormal number of leukocytes. And on biopsy, you'd look for a mononuclear cell infiltration with destruction of the alveolar spaces and fibrosis. The GI tract can be involved. And again, it can present with dysphonia or dysphagia. Patients sometimes complain of postprandial bloating, pain or distension, and again, very rarely the pneumatosis, cystoides intestinalis. There is an increase in malignancy risk. There's a strong association between malignancy and dermatomyositis and a little bit less so to polymyositis. The most common malignancies seen with these are ovarian, lung, pancreatic, stomach, and colorectal, and non-Hodgkin's. The overall risk is estimated to be the highest in the first 3 years surrounding the diagnosis, but is overall increased throughout the course of their follow-up. So we'll talk a little bit about the pathology, which will help differentiate the two. The basic pathology is one of inflammation. In dermatomyositis, B cells and CD4 cells are abundant in the perivascular region of the muscle. This is the membrane attack complex, is found in the perivascular areas and within the intrafascicular capillaries, which does lead to damage to the capillaries. And by contrast, polymyositis and occlusion bodymyositis are actually normal-appearing muscle cells that are just invaded by T lymphocytes. And both in dermatomyositis and polymyositis, they have an increased expression of co-stimulatory molecules. And this is just a quick